How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up here at WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of stuff to talk about today, including the Ultimate Fighter finale from last night. Not the most exciting season in the world, but it was a pretty good finale. Talk about all the matches on the show. Who is the new Ultimate Fighter, as Dana calls him, plus the Clay Guida-Anthony Pettis fight, how that fight went, what is next in the careers of Anthony Pettis and Clay Guida, and a lot more from last night. Tomorrow is a three-hour Raw. We've gone from the Ultimate Fighter finale to the Tough Enough finale. That is taking place tomorrow night on Raw. We'll talk about that show, some of the matches, if there's anything to discuss in that that nature on the show tomorrow. Plus, the upcoming Raw pay-per-view, the WWE pay-per-view, Capital Punishment, actually coming up in 2 weeks. This coming weekend, we've got two different pay-per-views. Saturday night is UFC in Vancouver. I'll be heading up to that show live, living here in Seattle. Come back down for the show on Sunday. And also on Sunday, it is a huge Slammiversary. A huge Slammiversary. Sunday is the anniversary of my birth. And the anniversary of Figure Four Weekly. And the anniversary of Figure4Online.com. Not sure if everybody knew that. Unfortunately, it's also the Slammiversary of TNA. So we're going to be watching that pay-per-view on Sunday night. We'll give you a preview of that show, although we'll do a lot of that next week as well. We do have news coming out of TNA, the departure of Mick Foley from the company. What happened? You'll be shocked. We'll tell you about that later on in the program. Plus, Impact this past Thursday night. We'll talk the best of the Super Junior Tournament. Two injuries in Japan. Super Hate and Manabu Nakanishi. We'll give you health updates on both guys. GSP versus Diaz is signed. Issues with Quentin Jackson, which made a lot of press the last couple of days. More on Awesome Kong, a.k.a. Karma. And we'll talk about the video game as well. The new WWE video game, no longer SmackDown versus Raw. Tons of stuff to talk about today, everybody. We're going to kick it off after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Last night was the Ultimate Fighter finale. After a lackluster season of the show, it came down to Tony Ferguson and Ramzi Neejum in the tough finale. And Ramzi knocked out in the first round. Tony won the contest. He basically looked better than anybody else all season, I thought, by a pretty wide margin. And in fact, the opening fight on the show, Chris Cope and Chuck O'Neill, this was a consolation bout, basically. The two losers in the semifinals ended up facing off to find out who, I guess, the number one loser was. Chris Cope won that fight, and Chuck O'Neill showed absolutely nothing in that fight. I mean, absolutely nothing. And just looking at the semifinalists here, the quality of fighter, and then looking at the main eventers here, I mean, to me, it was pretty clear that Ramzi was good enough to make it to the finals on this show, but Ferguson was like the only guy that I thought when it was over, he's not going to be a world beater immediately. Maybe he never will be, but I think he can actually fight in UFC and not get blitzed, and I'm not quite sure about all the other guys on this show.
Well, see, I'd have to take your word for it when it comes to the season, because I really didn't watch any of it at all outside of, I think, the first two or three episodes. I just, you know, the show, and I'm biased anyway because the show doesn't do a whole lot for me, although last night was, you know, Dana wants to do a Tuesday Night Fights type of deal. He's always talked about that. That used to be the old USA boxing show, you know, equivalent to Friday Night Fights for today on ESPN. It's something he wants to do. He wants to have fights, you know, every night of the week under the UFC banner across the world. And, you know, that last night was a good free TV show. It really was. And they have the advantage of the fact that they can add on matches, and if there are quick knockouts or quick submissions, you know, they can add stuff in from the undercard. And I just wish they would go more in that direction. And instead of having the Ultimate Fighter, I mean, replace it with that type of show. if Spike would let you do that, or wherever you're going to go would let you do that, and then focus more on doing 24/7 type of countdown shows when it comes to maybe following a fighter or two or something like that, a prospect that you have, and instead of having the Ultimate Fighter show, because I know they're going to do it again with Bisping and Mayhem, and it's going to be very entertaining because of who they are, but it's just, for me, again, it's unless the hosts are that good, it's just something I don't really want to see, and last night was a good example of it. I mean, you know, those four guys at the end, and Cope obviously did look good, but he was, you know, fighting a guy that was, you know, basically just a punching bag kind of out there, and Ferguson being head and shoulders over at Needham. I mean, you see how exciting the Pettis Guida fight was, and how exciting the Kingsbury Maldonado fight was. I would still rather watch those and then see guys not go through the Ultimate Fighter system, but just debut on these type of level of cards.
You know, I was thinking when watching the show last night, and when you talk about the idea of a Tuesday night fight show and that sort of thing, UFC has a deal they do every year. They have the Fighter Summit. I forget exactly what it's called, but they get all the fighters together, and they talk to them about, you need to save your money, you need to not do drugs, you need to be friendly.
Give them Twitter names?
You need to, yeah, you need to do well on Twitter, and don't do what Tito Ortiz did this week, and tweet a picture of your manhood, and then claim that you're, did you hear this story, by the way? I'm sure you did.
Yes, this is a good timing, too, with the, who's the guy in New York, Charles Wiener.
Yes, Tito's Wiener was all over Twitter this week. But anyway, the point of what I'm trying to say is, has nothing to do with Tito's Wiener, is that these fighters, there was a time where Ultimate Fighter was like must-see TV. And I've talked about this a million times, so I'm gonna keep this part of the rant short. There was a time when Ultimate Fighter was must-see TV. It's not anymore. There is so much fighting on television that you know, these shows are doing poor numbers now. You know, this season of Ultimate Fighter with Brock Lesnar is doing like a 0.9 half the time. A 0.9, okay? Like, the first season of Ultimate Fighter was doing low twos, you know, 1.92 in that range. And now we're down to an 0.9. And I don't think this show did all that well and that sort of thing. And, you know, we're exactly where I said we were going to be about 4 years ago. The big shows are still going to do big numbers. The medium shows are going to do less than the medium shows used to do. And the small shows are all going to do like 300,000 buys. They're going to do the base. It's just the way it's going to be. There's just so much fighting. Fighting isn't special anymore. Now, if you do a Tuesday night fight sort of deal or a Friday night fights, there should be fights every single week. This is great for the hardcore fan, okay? It's great. But Bellator's numbers are not lighting the world on fire. Ultimate Fighter numbers are not lighting the world on fire. This weekly free fights on television is going to be watched by all of your hardcore fans, but your casual fan is not going to watch the show every week. And we're going to get to a point where fighters have to understand that they're going to get over on pay-per-view. You know, it used to be that if you were a contestant on Ultimate Fighter, you could get over. You know, everybody, I mean, that's how the early, the guys like Forrest Griffin and Stefan Bonner and Chris Lieben and Josh Koscheck, these guys all got over because of that show. Now, on this episode, on this season of Ultimate Fighter, Tony Ferguson got over as a huge heel to a 0.9 audience. All the people that tuned into the finale last night that knew nothing about Tony Ferguson and the drama on the show, they had no idea why he was booed. They had no idea why Ramsey didn't like him. And he just came off as a guy to the audience at home. So the point of what I'm trying to say here is the guys have to know that you're no longer going to get over on these television shows. You're not going to get over on an Ultimate Fighter. You're probably not going to get over on a Tuesday night fight if they start something up like that. You're not going to get over on any of these smaller events. Your best chance to get over is when you're on a pay-per-view or when you're on a major television special, like a UFC pay-per-view caliber show on Spike. You need to have the best fight you possibly can. And when Joe Rogan hands that mic to you, you've got to get out there and you've got to let the people know, this is why you should care about me, and this is the guy that I want to beat up. And the guys that figure this out are the guys that are going to be stars in 2 or 3 years. The guys the guys that go out there and they just say, you know, I really enjoyed that fight. I want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank the fans, and I'll face anybody that that Joe Silva wants to put me with. Okay, you're going to be completely forgotten. All right, you're going to be completely forgettable because this is your only chance to get over now. You and Joe Rogan is very fast to pull that mic away, as we saw last night with Clay Guida, of all people. Joe yanked the mic away from Clay Guida, okay? So he's going to do that to you. So you've got a very short window of time to let people know why they need to care about you. And you need to bring it in your fights, which Chuck O'Neill at the beginning of the show did not do. So we'll see who gets over and who doesn't, but that's pretty much going to be the game in the next couple of years.
Well, and that's, I think, in having a Tuesday night fight as opposed to the Ultimate Fighter show, I mean, for the most part, the only thing you can do coming out of the Ultimate Fighter show is look like a jerk to get yourself remembered. For the most part, I mean, that's pretty much how it works. There's no one where you go, you know, that what a great guy. I mean, for the most part, that really hasn't happened. So to have, like, fights like that, but, you know, they have to go all out anyway, even if they're on a Tuesday night fight show, because that's where they get the spectacular knockout or the knee or something like that, and they'll have a little bit of time afterwards, and you know what, maybe they fight 2 months later as opposed to 3 or 4 months later down the line. So, I mean, if they bring it every night anyway, and that's just something in those classes that they do and those get-togethers and all that stuff, and wanting for them to do more with social media, it's because it gives them the opportunity to sell themselves, and it really, you know, the onus is on these guys to go out there and be able to talk a little bit and do the stuff and have the people around them to build them up.
You know, it's really funny when you think about this is it used to be like this in pro wrestling, where the guys, you know, if you were a pro wrestler, the idea was you had to make yourself stand out. You had to come up with a look. You had to come up with a catchphrase, an interview style. Maybe you had some spots in your matches. And it was your job to get yourself over. And if the fans got behind you, the promoters would go, okay, well, you know, this guy's popular. We need to get behind this fool here. Nowadays, it's not like that at all, you know. They tell you you need to do what you can to get over, but, you know, they'll bury you. They'll switch things around. They'll try and screw with you. They'll pull ribs on you and that sort of thing. And you know, it all comes down to who they want to get over nowadays. But it's actually, you know, UFC nowadays is very similar to how guys used to have to get over in pro wrestling. I mean, it's your job. If you're Clay Guida, you got to grow your hair long. You know, you gotta dance. You gotta dye your hair red. You got to do a lot of different things. And I know, Mike, you want to talk about this. We'll do this after the break. It's we're up to the commercial, so we'll come right back and talk more about this on Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live after a Clay Guida-esque first segment here on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking about getting yourself over, both as a fighter and a wrestler. And Mike, you had a comment about Clay Guida and his wild hair.
Yeah, he's a, you know, big-ass hairy chest, a big, you know, a bunch of hair flying all over the place. You know, he's nicknamed the Carpenter, you know, I don't know how. I mean, I guess Clay Guida fought like Jesus. I don't know. But one thing I do know is when you have a guy behind you, when you have a hype man, and Mike Tyson had, I forget, Rory Holloway, and I forget who the other guy was, and, you know, there's promoters out there, and Muhammad Ali had Bundini Brown. You know, in the UFC, if you can have a hype man standing behind you with a cutout, life-size action figure fat head of you, that's good. Now, if everyone had a stand-up, you know, life-size action figure behind them or cut-out stand-up behind them, that wouldn't be good. But Guida was the first to do it. He's kind of got this thing going on, and it's great because not only does he stand out because of the frantic pace in the ring and all that stuff, you take that out of it and you just place him there to somebody who doesn't know fighting and you line up a couple guys, I think he's going to stand out, and they may want to see him, and then he goes and backs it up in the ring, and that's great.
Clay Guida, if he looked like Jim Miller, you know, given his record, he'd be gone by now. But the fans love Clay Guida. And so when he had that streak where it was like he lost every other fight, he's still around, you know, because he's got something special about it. And he understands, too, because Dana White at one point offered him $5,000 to cut his hair off. And he said no. And so Dana said, well, how about $10,000? And he said no. And, you know, he's talking about how, you know, Dana was joking about this and all that sort of thing. Maybe Dana was, but, you know, when a guy offers you $5,000 and then he doubles it to $10,000, I don't think Dana was joking. But the point was, He knows that his hair is very important to the Clay Guida character, and it's very memorable, and so he's not going to cut it off, and that's all part of the package. I'm not saying everybody needs to grow their hair out, but if you're a fighter or a pro wrestler, you got to sit there and you got to think, okay, I get a very limited amount of time to try and get myself over, so what is special about me? And that brings us to the Ultimate Fighter finale tomorrow. We'll talk more about Ultimate Fighter here in a bit, but the Tough Enough finale tomorrow. I want to talk about this. Have you been watching this whole season?
I have.
What are your thoughts on it's coming down to the end of the wire tomorrow, and what are you expecting to happen?
The way the whole season has gone, it leads to you going, well, it should be Luke. Just off the base of the thing, you got Andy, who's, you know, been in the bottom three, and he's gotten yelled at by Stone Cold, and, you know, he's been called out, and, you know, you're big, but, you know, the silent rage is all, you know, BS and this, that, and the other. And obviously he's been looked at as the underdog, but he's also been the one that's been down in Florida that obviously they haven't noted or anything like that. So, and you don't see everything on this show, so I think it could be a surprise to some people if Andy wins. I actually think Luke will. But still, if Andy, they go a different direction and have him win, I mean, I think that's what's going to surprise the most amount of people, although I guess it really shouldn't be. And realistically, both of them are going to be back down in Florida anyway.
Yep, it's down to Andy and Luke. And, you know, Andy has being a big guy going for him. Luke has... He looks like what WWE wants in a wrestler going for him. The problem is that there's a lot of guys that have that look going for them in WWE, and they're pushing Alex Riley, and, you know, what does Luke have that Alex Riley doesn't, you know?
And Riley's got far more than Luke does right now, with the exception he's not as athletic, but I don't know about his wrestling prowess. I mean, maybe you do more per se, but... When you look at Riley, he's big, he's good-looking, he can talk. You know, he hasn't embarrassed himself, you know, in his last couple weeks with The Miz. So, you know, he's far better off than Luke's going to be coming up, because he's far smaller.
Yeah, I look at Luke and it's like, okay, you are a cross between Randy Orton and Alex Riley. And, you know, when I was coming up in wrestling, Buddy Wayne would look at all these guys on the indie scene, and he would just point to all of them, and he'd go, okay, you know, you're trying to be Jeff Hardy, you're trying to be Mick Foley, you know, you're trying to be whoever, Steve Austin, and he would always say to me, they don't need another Rey Mysterio, they have one. They don't need another Mick Foley, they already have one. You know, you've got to try to be something different. And I just don't see anything that Luke has that somebody else in the company doesn't have. And, I mean, Alex Riley, I mean, at worst, he's just as good a wrestler. And he's taller, and he's a bigger guy. So, as far as, like, you know, talking, Alex Riley's better. As far as being a star, Randy Orton's better. It's just, you know, and at least, like, Andy... You know, he's a big guy. He's got kind of a unique look. Nobody really looks like Andy. You know what I mean? I guess kind of, I don't know. He's like a long-haired, younger, smaller Big Show. But then again, you know, he's a big guy on Tough Enough, but is he a big guy in WWE? Not really. You know, Billy Gunn, people never really thought of Billy Gunn as a big guy, and Billy Gunn's just about the same size as Andy. You know, Billy Gunn, if you put him in TNA, is a giant. You put him in WWE and put him in there with Kane and Zeke and Big Show, he ain't that big a guy. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, not only who wins, but whether either of them ever goes anywhere after this.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. And, you know, it's Les Thatcher has said it, I think, you know, repeatedly about, you know, it's like you could tell Luke is working every second than he's been on camera. He's been slimy and, you know, again, being just another guy. And will people resent him for this break, even though, you know, everybody will openly say that, you know, oh, you can't begrudge somebody for taking advantage of an opportunity. That's true. But, you know, and then obviously you have, you know, Andy with the kid that Austin had called out and all that stuff. And, you know, again, does he want to have that kind of time away from his kids? It's going to be interesting to see how these guys do actually their careers develop and if they are able to hold on, because look, a lot of guys, you know, Johnny Jeters and ones like that, who just, you know, they thought it was their dream and then they got to live it and it wasn't as much of a dream as they thought.
Yeah, I've talked to people in WWE who've watched this show, and no matter who they're impressed with or who they think is going to win, you know, it's kind of sort of like neither of these guys are going to make it. None of the people on the show are actually going to make it anywhere. But
I'll say this, though. They should be happy with the way this show went, because I am, and I know that I think the battles between USA and WWE, and obviously it was goofy to have wrestling bleeped out at times or whatever. I forget what it was with Bret Hart, but it, you know, at least the give and take there, they did at least end up, to me at least, with a really good, pretty compelling TV show that, you know, again, didn't get monster ratings. It may not be where USA wanted it to be, but I thought it was at least a valiant effort.
I really thought it was a very well-produced show. I mean, there were things about the show, I mean, that there were things in the content of the show that I thought were wacky, like, you know, you got to run the ropes for 3 straight minutes, and if you don't, you can't be a wrestler. It's like, no one in WWE can run the ropes for 3 straight minutes, with
the
exception
of... Yeah, but Brian, remember, too, I mean, this is real-world Road Rules Challenge-esque sort of stuff, where it's dumb stuff for a TV show, because you're not going to want to see somebody take, you know, drop down in a headlock repeatedly for an hour on TV.
Well, yeah, but they weren't running. They didn't show the entire 3 minutes of running. They only showed like 15 seconds of it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like some of the wacky challenges they had where it's like, okay, yeah, who is going to need to stand on the top rope and that sort of stuff and squat down as people bounce off?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff is, I mean, listen, all I'm saying is that running the ropes for 3 minutes has absolutely nothing to do with professional wrestling. Whether you can be a wrestler, you'll never do it in your career unless you do some sort of goofy comedy spot on a Chikara show. But your average person is never, ever going to do this. But you know what? Everybody's going to have to take a backwards bump over the top rope to the floor. So how about we make a contest about that? Or you know, maybe you've got to vault up to the top rope like Rob Van Dam. Let's see who can do it. You know, there's a lot of... I just think there are a lot of contests, if you think about it, that you can create on a Tough Enough style show that actually apply to your professional wrestling career, as opposed to this stuff that's just... It's stupid stuff that has nothing to do with wrestling. You'll never do it again. And nobody in WWE could do it. That's all I'm saying. But...
Oh, yeah, true. And I wonder if, you know, and again, I would love to get a producer or something like that off of one of those shows and ask them, you know, because it's like, remember the complaints about the moonsault when Al Snow and the first time around when they did the shows of like, you know, God, you pulled back the curtain. And I know that it's they want to be an entertainment thing and everything now, but I wonder if there are some working in there where it's like, if USA goes, we want something wacky, WWE isn't stopping going, oh, yeah, we want to see these moves and things like that, because there are still people that probably don't like this concept.
Well, to be honest, I would think that this was something that Hugh Morris came up with, Bill DeMott. Because he had a rep down in when he was a part of WWE developmental of being the drill sergeant type guy.
Deep South.
Yeah, you're gonna do all these calisthenics. You're gonna do all this. You're gonna do all. And if you can't do it, you're not tough enough to be a wrestler. That's not true. You know, let the guys learn how to wrestle and then put them in wrestling matches. And if they can't hold up in wrestling matches, then they can't make it as a wrestler. You know, it has nothing to do. How many Hindu squats in a row do you think Big Show's gonna do before he has a heart attack? You know, it ain't more than about 25. But he's still out there every night being a pro wrestler. So that's all I have to say about that. But the point is, aside from things like that, I thought very well put together television show. You know, they did a very good job as far as, you know, you knew all the characters. I mean, I watch Tough Enough, and then I watch Ultimate Fighter. And, like, at the end of the season, it's like, okay, who made it to the finals again? And with Tough Enough, I knew every single person on the show. I knew all of their different wacky personalities. You know, I knew their strengths and weaknesses. And the deal at the end of the show where Steve Austin is cutting a promo on all of them, they really shot that in such a way that it was filled with drama. And Steve Austin is like, there's no one in the world who would be better at the role of ripping into these students than Steve Austin. I mean, he was just great. And they shot it great. And they, you know, they didn't have the goofy music. The music was like perfect for each of them. I mean, it was very, very well done. So I'm just excited because tomorrow we're probably going to get Austin cutting a promo on both guys live on Raw, which that's going to be fun times. We're going to talk more about this when we come back from the break, and a lot of other news as well. We're also going to be taking your email questions, so tons of stuff coming up. Check it out, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Daily news updates, television show reviews, columns, the whole nine yards, and radio shows. If you love this radio show and you only get to hear it one time per week on Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, any of the various places you can hear this program, you are missing out. We have a subscription area on WrestlingObserver.com, and we do radio shows every single day. We do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week, most of them between 45 minutes and an hour, some of them as long as an hour and a half. Add all that time up. That's, I don't know, 20, 25 hours worth of programming every single week. And on top of that, not only do you get all of this new programming if you sign up to the website, but every show that we do goes into our archive, and it is available for you 24/7. So the price is $10.99 a month. That's $10.99. And for that price, it's essentially as if you signed up 5 years ago. Because if there is a radio program with Mick Foley that we recorded in 2006, and you never even heard of this show, well, if you sign up, you jump into the archives, you search for Mick Foley, all the shows we've done with Foley come up, you listen to them, and life is great. Every show we've ever done is available in the archives. There's thousands, tens of thousands of hours of audio, thousands and thousands of shows. If you sign up today for $10.99, you basically, for 1 month, it's $10.99 for a month, you could not go through every show in our archives. It is literally impossible. In fact, if you signed up for a year and listened nonstop 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it would be tough to get through all of the shows in our archives. So if you love this program, and if you've got a, I don't know, a long commute, if you like to listen to stuff at work because your job drives you nuts, if you like to listen to stuff at the gym, if you go for walks, and you like to listen to audio on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, this is a place for you. More audio than you can shake a stick at. If you sign up, I guarantee you won't regret it. Go to WrestlingObserver.com right now. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. A listing of our latest three free radio shows. Absolutely free. There's nothing you have to do except click the link. There's an MP3 right there. Download it to your computer. Put it on your iPod, iPhone, iPad, Droid, whatever you listen to your audio on. And away you go. And if you like what you hear, sign up. Again, it's only $10.99 a month, and you get full access to everything. There's no special members area. There's no extra fees or anything like that. It's a one-time, one-month fee. You get all this stuff. You can sign up for a year. You can sign up for recurring. You can sign up once and never sign up again. It's up to you. So give it a shot. WrestlingObserver.com. You will not regret it. If you love this show, you will not regret it. You can also check out our Facebook pages. We've got an official Facebook for this show, Wrestling Observer Live Official. Head up to Facebook.com and search for that. And also my personal Facebook page, Facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez. I had to make a page. My personal page hit its limit. So I've got a new page up there. Head out there and check it out. And Twitter as well, Twitter.com/Brian Alvarez. A lot of different places to go. And Mike, anything you'd like to plug, or should we just move on here?
Well, I'll just say the at Sempervivi, S-E-M-P-E-R-V-I-V-E. That's my personal Twitter, although I expect you to have far more tweets than I do.
And you can get pictures of my cats if you go up to my Facebook page. Facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez. All right, what were we talking about here? The Tough Enough finale? Anything you'd like to add to that before we move on?
I will actually add something in the fact that there weren't drunken rampages. You know, there was them out drinking one night, but there were no multiple...
I thought you meant Quentin Jackson.
Well, there was no, you know, just tough... You know, what you would think from The Ultimate Fighter, that wasn't on there. And that's one of the things that actually made it, to me, a better show, too. And, again, one of the reasons that The Ultimate Fighter, frankly, has jumped the shark. Because, again, the only way you can get out of there is being an unlikable character. And, obviously, Luke being an unlikable character on this show has got him to the end. But there were stories in there. And people, even if you thought they didn't deserve to be there, you got into their stories, as you were saying. So, again, they did a really, really good job with this. And I hope it comes back despite the ratings that were, I guess, less than what they were hoping for, at least.
Ultimate Fighter and Fights in the House, it's just like anything else. It's just like anything in wrestling. You know, if you've got a fight in the house every week and you just have random guys mad at each other and they want to beat each other up, then all you have is Impact. But if you do something like you do on the first episode of the first season of Ultimate Fighter, where you've got Chris Lieben and he's you know, everybody hates him and he's a big heel, and you know, then you've got, you know, Koscheck and Bobby Southworth that are egging him on and this and that, and you know, later it comes out that, oh, you know, this guy came from a broken home and he's just trying to do his best and this is why he has a chip on his shoulder, and you know, essentially he turns babyface, and then, you know, Koscheck and Southworth are causing even more problems, and now they're becoming the big heels, and finally Lieben snaps and goes on this rampage throughout the house. That works, because you built it up for a long time. You've got characters people care about. You know, you've got a storyline, essentially, that people can relate to. That kind of thing works. But if you just have dudes, you know, oh, man, you know, this guy, he was out of position in a moonsault. I want to beat him up. That's just lame. So it just, you know, it's like anything else. It depends on how it's put together.
That's the thing. It's not, and the organic stuff always works the best anyway.
The show is 3 hours tomorrow, everybody. It is a 3-hour edition of Raw. And I guess we're going to have some of the, I guess we got 2 weeks left, but some of the final build to the WWE Capital Punishment pay-per-view, which I guess is I guess they don't really have a theme to the show this time, except that it's, you know, they're doing the Washington, D.C. theme and that sort of thing. And I guess the question to you is, what are your thoughts on the possibility of Big Dave Batista returning?
If there was going to be any place to do it, that would be the place. With that said, if I'm them, I do it, obviously. If I'm Batista, I don't know if I do. But then again, I don't know what they would have thrown at him. He is a cut-and-dry superstar. I mean, he was awesome on the way out with him, you know, kind of breaking down and whining and just being the ultimate, well, D-bag, basically, on the way out the door, and he left people actually wanting more. So if he does come back, I think that would be great. And I'm sure with this, in the situation they're in the needing of stars and trying to deflect eyes away from the fact that they need to build stars like Alex Riley and some of these other guys, that, yeah, it would be a great idea if he came back for it, as far as they go.
They've got they got one match signed so far, John Cena versus Truth, and more matches will be made official over the next, they better announce.
Like all of them.
They better announce a bunch of them tomorrow, yes. So, that's a show. You know, they could always put this, they could put Cena and Truth on as the semi-main, and, you know, stuff happens, and then all of a sudden Batista comes in and destroys both guys. There's a lot of different things they could do. I'm not even saying Batista's going to be there. I'm just saying that if Batista wants to come back and he's got nothing to do right now, he is a Washington, D.C. guy, and this would be a great place to come back and
maybe him and Mason Ryan could actually do, like, a mime act in the back where it's just kind of like, you know, they're mirroring
act?
Each other.
A mime act?
Hey, that's what they would do if they were on Impact. I mean, you're talking about MMA earlier and trying to market yourself and making yourself stand out. Can you imagine if the UFC all of a sudden had Vince Russo? He would bring in Guida's brother to have them face off and have like a hair versus hair mask match.
I never thought I would hear Batista and Mason Ryan should become mimes.
Actually, Batista should just go out there, destroy Mason Ryan, and put him back in Florida where that poor boy belongs.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you're going to get that. So that is, although you never know. You know, if they got the real Batista back, they wouldn't need Mason Ryan for a while.
Well, they don't like having, I mean, too many big guys around. Remember, they had Jackson Andrews up, and he went down, then Mason Ryan was up. So, you know, it probably would be a good idea.
Shouldn't Jackson Andrews debut at Capital Punishment and Abraham Washington?
You should have Abraham Washington back with Michael Tarver, just because he's still working the BlackBerry, I believe.
Yeah. Now, we've also got the TNA Slammiversary event, which is coming up on next Sunday. Of course, as noted at the beginning of this program, that is my birthday. Post Office Box 426 in Woodinville, 98072, is a great place to send gifts. But the Slammiversary show here... are you looking forward to this show?
No.
Mr. Anderson in the main event on my birthday?
No, I'm not looking forward to the show. I've been trying to avoid the TV over the last couple of weeks. Apparently, from what I've heard, people are saying I may have been making the right decision, so I'm not looking forward to it at all.
Let's see what we've got here. They've actually got a card, believe it or not, a week in advance, which is pretty impressive. Sting and Mr. Anderson, which God knows I don't need to see these men wrestling ever again. Mostly Mr. Anderson, I won't lie. That's for the title. Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett, which is awesome because they've had Falls Count Anywhere and cage matches and all these sort of matches. The blow-off match in the feud is a singles match.
Yeah, I'll give them this. I've been stunned in the way over the last few months where it's like, this is going to be it. And I keep thinking, okay, no, it's not. So I'll make my prediction always that Jarrett will somehow survive in this. But yeah, now it looks like it's going to be the end. And they're going to have the best match on the show, I believe. But it's like, okay, you're ending it with a singles match. This is only TNA does this.
James Storm, by the way, Angle's Olympic gold medals are going to be on the line. James Storm and Alex Shelley against Doug Williams and Magnus, which should be pretty good. You've got James Storm, Alex Shelley, and Doug Williams in there. Magnus has improved, but this should be a good match for the tag team titles, although they're already teasing a breakup between James Storm and Alex Shelley before they've even had a match together. That's always good. Mickie James and Angelina Love for the women's title. Samoa Joe versus Christian. Matt Morgan versus Scott Steiner. And AJ Styles versus Bully Ray in a last man standing match. Any thoughts on any of those battles?
Okay, I take it back. Maybe AJ Styles and Bubba Ray or Bully Ray will steal the show, because Bully Ray has been one of the incredibly big bright spots as just being a awful human being in TNA in his role ever since Devon. So Bully Ray and Styles actually ought to be really good. Morgan and Steiner is going to be cringe-worthy, I'm sure. I would figure Crimson has to beat Samoa Joe, which would make sense in the fact that they want to build Crimson up as a monster or as one of their big guys, but it's just too bad that he would do it going over Samoa Joe, who they haven't really figured out how to use since Kurt Angle. And I can't believe zombies will be able to survive wrestling for even a short period of time in a championship women's match.
This is amazing.
A zombie!
Well, that too. I'm actually talking.
Ivory as Tina Ferrari did this on Glow in like 1986.
Yeah, that's about the time frame of Russo nowadays. He's gone back to 1989 with the Sting.
And you'd figure since you like going back to that time, and you had somebody who wanted to be creative with you in Mick Foley because you loved that era so much, and you loved Mick Foley that much, that you would have bent at least a little bit to help the man out creatively, so he wouldn't have to leave over creative issues.
Well, Mick Foley, I think, left over a lot of different things. Mick Foley's leaving everybody. He's asked for his release, as noted, and it's creative issues. I'm sure they had some wacky idea that he probably thought was stupid, but at the same time, it's like he was upset over a lot of things. You know, I think he was really upset that his work with Rain was not more heavily promoted, and just a lot
of should have been.
There are a lot of people that have been promised that outside projects they were doing would be promoted by TNA if they signed, and then they weren't. So Foley, there are far more things than just the show don't make no sense. Although that is a great one to use. But we'll talk more about this after the break. We're up against a break here. So back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the departure of Mick Foley. As noted before the break, a lot of things happening. It's not just one thing. You know, it's creative differences, I'm sure. You know, he came back as the head of the network, and, you know, Dave Meltzer on our show last night, we do not know this for sure, but he'd been given the impression that in the end, it was going to come out that it was a swerve, shockingly, and that Foley, Hogan, and Eric were in on this together. Maybe Foley thought this was just stupid, and then add that on top of different things that he'd wanted promoted, not being promoted. He had like I forget where it was, but some sort of television appearance that they were going to promote, and they never did, and he was upset about that. And, you know, it's just Let's not lie. It's a rinky-dink promotion. You know, it just is. Everybody's on a different page. It's not just the television. You know, there's a lot of things that need to be done to run a successful wrestling company, and it never gets done. And it's not any one person's fault, although, you know, as far as television, it all comes down to Vince Russo and Dixie Carter. Because Vince Russo doesn't know what he's doing, and Dixie Carter keeps employing him. So that's a major, major problem with Impact. But, I mean, everything else inside the company, it is really a disaster. And I know that some people, you know, some fans get mad at me for this, and they want to defend TNA. But listen, you're the only people defending it. Like, the people inside TNA, nobody's defending this company. Nobody in TNA defends the television. Everybody goes and they talk to each other about how stupid this television show is. You know, it's not just me. You know, this is everybody knows. It's no mystery. So, you know, Foley's gone, and I'm sure that others will go here and there, and many will just stay because, hey, this is where they're stuck at right now. So, sad state of affairs, but, you know, nothing to get mad about.
No, you really can't. It's just one of those things, you know, Eric Bischoff, the numbers don't lie. You're right.
They sure don't.
You got another 1.1 again for your big re-push again a couple weeks after it happens. So, all right.
We're going to head to our hourly break. When we come back, we got a lot of other news to talk about today. We'll take some email questions as well. And lots of stuff still to come. So be back in 7 minutes, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Radio Network and Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92. We'll be right back. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. Last hour, talked a lot of different subjects, including the Ultimate Fighter finale. And before we go any further in the program today, we should mention this. The winner of the Clay Guida-Anthony Pettis fight was Clay Guida. He out-wrestled him for 3 rounds. He beat him. Anthony Pettis, the former WEC light, actually the 155-pound champion. And Clay Guida was not in line for a title shot, but when this fight was over, some people argued he should get one at some point. And Mike, where do you fall?
Clay Guida, you know, you talked about him, how he's able to present himself is one of the ways he's been able to save himself. But really, more than that, it's the way that he fights. On top of that package, in the ring, he is constant energy. I mean, he really surprised Pettis as far as being able to get out of whatever he tried on the ground. One, taking him down in the first place and really, you know, giving him absolute fits there. But everything that was tried by Pettis to get out or to do to Guida, Guida just kept in motion and throwing knees to the hips and letting himself get into wrist control just because he was able to use his body so well. He's one of those guys that is always going to be someone who you say, hey, when times are bad or when you're not sure who the contender should be, he's always one of those guys because of the way he fights and because of the fact people love watching him fight. That, you know, and they'll pay to watch him fight too, is one of the reasons he's always going to be up in the mix. And there's other people that deserve it more. But if you're trying to sell pay-per-views, then it wouldn't be all that bad of an idea to have him on there. It just depends on the situation. Not fair, but hey, that's sports sometimes.
That is sports sometimes. I think that obviously there are going to be people in line ahead of him. You've still got the Gray Maynard title defense that was supposed to take place in May that got delayed. And then after that, I mean, there's always the possibility of Gilbert Melendez coming over. There's a lot of different things that you can do, particularly in that division. But at some point, I think that giving Clay a title shot is not the worst idea in the world. He's won several fights in a row right now. Maybe some people would say not the most exciting, but I thought last night's fight was great. So we'll talk about that more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com and Facebook.com/official Brian Alvarez. Joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And Mike, some bad news coming out of Japan. At least one serious injury, one potentially serious injury. Tell us about Manabu Nakanishi and Super Hate.
Yes, with Nakanishi first, because it's the newest news. Yesterday at their show at Kyoto KBS Hall, their main event was a six-man tag match between Hiroshi Tanahashi Tenzan, Wataru Inoue against Hirooki Goto, Manabu Nakanishi, and Tomioki Honma. And the match was stopped at 11:41 when Inoue lifted up Nakanishi, gave him a German suplex, and suffered at what was not sure what at the time. They weren't sure how badly he was hurt, but he had lost feeling, and basically today it's come out where it looks like it was a stinger. It was an incredibly bad stinger, but he has regained feeling and motion, but they're going to, I guess, take a look at where his career is at right now as far as recovery time from this. Now, obviously with stingers in the NFL, you hear it get thrown around a lot, but because of his age and everything else, I guess, time will just tell. They're worried enough about it to say that obviously they're going to, it's not something he can come back from right away, so it's time will tell on that one. When it comes to the issue with Super Hate in All Japan, just kind of a bizarre story that people thought was an angle at first. There's a heel group called Voodoo Murderers in All Japan, and led by a guy named Taru, who has appeared in Ring of Honor, and Minoru Kono Masada, who's been a long-time guy who's been on the Juggalo shows and things like that, and in Mexico, so a lot of people know him. Rene Dupree and Joe Doring. Well, there was apparently a situation with a guy by the name of Super Hate, Nobukazu Harai, and he and Taru got into a fist fight backstage, and apparently police are looking into it because it may have been Taru, along with Minoru Kono and Masada, all beating him up. The only thing that's known for sure is they sent Rene Dupree and Joe Doring out of the room, and all four of those guys stayed in. And Taru, at a press conference where it was announced he was suspended, has come out and said, "I don't think those other guys were involved in it. He takes all the heat for what happened." But the reason that this came out and the police are investigating is because Harai, after a match with Kenzo Suzuki, suffered a stroke. And they're not sure. Obviously, they looked into it, and they were looking around to what had happened. He had taken a chair shot from Suzuki. But in looking into it, this fight, which ended up being broken up by a old All Japan referee, Kohei Wada, they had to look into it to see whether this beating may have had something to do with that stroke happening. So it's just a ugly situation and still being looked into right now. As it stands, Taru's been fired, and Minoru Kono and Masada have all been indefinitely suspended at the very least. So it's just kind of a very nasty story, and they've been clear to say that, you know, hey, this beating, you know, may not have been the thing that caused the stroke, but regardless, at the end of the day, the beating occurred and the stroke happened, and it's just too bad. And it's also too bad that, you know, chair shots, and Kenzo Suzuki has looked awful, and I mean awful. May have had the worst Big Show match of the year against Minoru Suzuki during the Champions Carnival. Just a terrible, terrible match, and he's been terrible. And, you know, the stiff chair shot, if that's what caused it, should be another wake-up call as well.
Just, it is tough in this situation, because if he had not taken a hard chair shot a week prior, then it's like, well, you know, if he suffered a stroke due to head trauma, it obviously would have to be the fight. But, you know, when he had taken the chair shot the week prior, then it's like, okay, well, you know, now it gets a little more difficult to try to figure out what the cause of this was. And there's really, like, I mean, does anybody know anything more about the fight? Why did it happen? What started it? What caused all of this?
Well, the beef seems to be that Taru took Harai to task for being a guy who... Now, Harai's been wrestling for years. He was a mid-card level guy that they gave this. They did it with Iizuka in New Japan, too, where they've given guys in All Japan, mid-card guys who have been around for a while, you know, a rejuvenation in some way, or a, you know, a heel character. And Harai became this guy Super Hate, just to give him something different after all of these years. But apparently, he's been, I guess, has gone to matches drunk, and he hasn't basically been setting a good example for the young guys. And Taru finally had enough of it, took issue with it. And it's just, you know, people are going to say, well, you know what, that couldn't have, you know, could have caused the stroke, but you're not sure. And why were the other three guys suspended? They're suspended because the police got involved. Obviously, they sent Doring and Dupree out. So was Minoru Kono and Masada watching the door? I mean, what were they doing there? You know, Taru says they may have been involved, but it was all kind of a blur. So it's going to have to be established who was involved and why this fight, you know, more if it was more than just Taru taking him to task, then it's going to have to come out what that actually was, because as of now it just seems like that. And again, it's in 2011. This is all really awful, especially the dojo beatings in the sumos. And I mean, canvas ring sport in Japan is at its, you know, completely lowest point. You know, that I think it could possibly be across lines, because, you know, it's not an Olympic year. So even though judo and wrestling are still strong amateur wrestling, everything else has either been in scandal or on its, you know, doing very poorly right now. So having something like this where the police are actually involved, it ends up being a beating, and there were four guys there, and even if it was one-on-one, it still looks bad on the other guys. It's just not good.
So what is the very latest on his condition, and has there been any change in the last couple of days?
There hasn't seemed to be. I haven't heard any, you know, change so far outside the fact that, you know, he's still just recovering from it, and that's it. You know, he's not in great condition at all, so... You know, and there's the other thing, too, is going to be his recovery from this, too. And if it does get to the point where, you know, criminal charges are filed, you know, I'm not sure how the laws work in Japan as far as, you know, maybe he doesn't know, Harai would not want to press charges, but maybe the police do. I'm not sure how all that actually works over there. So that's going to be something else that we're going to have to watch, too.
What's the latest on the Best of the Super Juniors tournament?
Yeah, the Best of the Super Juniors had the most recent show today, and on the New Japan YouTube site, you can actually see a wrap-up of the first couple days in about a 20-minute video they have up. New Japan's done a great job utilizing that stuff, and is arguably the promotion of the year so far this year, and may have had the match of the year on April 3rd with Yuji Nagata and Hiroshi Tanahashi. But the new Best of the Super Juniors is rolling along right now with Prince Devitt and Kenny Omega leading the A block with 10 points apiece. Block B has got the great Sasuke leading with 10 points, and obviously there's going to be a lot of changes to this as it goes along. There's been a lot of surprises, including the very first night where they loaded up on upsets, including Eddie Edwards defeating Prince Devitt, and they had a bunch of matches like that. Hayato Jr. Fujita upsetting Koji Kanemoto, choking him out. So they've been booking this thing very well, and if the clips are any indication that are up on the YouTube site, the entire thing so far has been a raving success.
So basically they've got a block dominated by the veterans and a block dominated by the youngsters.
Well, it's kind of mixed up that way. And I was thinking before this thing was going to happen, we'd get Devitt and Taguchi facing off. Their tag team partners are close, but I could see them actually facing off against each other. But run through the blocks real quick. It's Prince Devitt, Kenny Omega, Koji Kanemoto, Tiger Mask, Davey Richards, TJ Perkins, Hayato Jr. Fujita, Taichi and Jado. And in the other block, Great Sasuke, Jushin Liger, Kushida, Kota Ibushi, Taguchi, Taka Mikanoshu, Mascara Dorada, which is another story altogether, Daisuke Sasaki, and Gato. And it's unfortunate for Dorada having to be booked in this, because he's going to miss out his chance on unmasking Averno.
Well, the Averno story we talked about last week, and the only update we've gotten this week is that Averno has denied he is going to WWE. Which he pretty much has to do, since he's got his mask. He's scheduled to defend his mask coming up at the next show. But his father, who is a referee in CMLL, has basically gone on the record saying, "Yeah, he's going." So that's a situation right there. And I guess we shall see what comes out of this. But that's coming up here very, very soon. So there you go. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment talking more of your emails as well. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got plenty of stuff to talk about here today. We're going to take some of your email questions as well. And in fact, why wait? Let's jump into the mailbag. Jordan here says, between the Jeff Hardy pay-per-view incident and now China releasing another adult movie, why, he asks? Well, she needs to make money, quite frankly. Where will TNA finally draw the line on unacceptable behavior and fire people? Does Dixie Carter just not want to fire people, or are they more concerned with public relations? Actually, that's kind of a... That last question doesn't really make sense. Does she not want to fire people, or are they more concerned with public relations? If they were concerned about public relations, they would fire people. That's... So that's kind of a... I don't understand that part of the question. But suffice to say, China was never under contract. China had verbally agreed to two dates. That was all she had agreed to do. And she made her TV appearance, and she made her pay-per-view appearance, and that was the end of that. So she was never under contract. There was nothing... There was. I mean, they can't release you if you're not under contract. So it was a one-time...
I don't know if she has been making other appearances on the social scene at all or anything like that, but I would assume that she got a payday from TNA to also help, you know, with getting her name out there for the... I guess the impending release or whatever it is of this brand new Backdoor to China tape.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, I heard about it like a day before the official announcement, and at the time it was top secret. So I would guess that absolutely nobody in TNA knew that this movie was going to be coming out. And the story that I heard when she initially went to TNA. Was I guess I don't know if she told people this, but the story that I heard was that she verbally agreed to the two dates and nothing else because she did not want to commit to TNA because she still wanted to maybe get back with WWE. Now, obviously, you know, she taped this DVD months and months ago. In fact, months and months ago, the rumors had gotten out that she'd done this, and she denied it, and other people denied it. So she has to know. That WWE being PG, the fact that she's released another porn tape means there's zero chance of her going back to WWE. So my guess is that story that got out about why she didn't sign with TNA was a cover story, and that the reason she didn't sign was because she was going to be doing this movie, or this movie was about to come out, and she just wanted to get her name out prior to it getting out, and probably WWE didn't want to do anything with her on television. So that's I assume what the whole story is here, but she's not going back to TNA anytime soon. That's pretty much, I mean, even before the movie came out, the word was she made her appearances, and that's pretty much it for now. So I think that's how that whole story came out. As far as Jeff Hardy, it's just another story entirely. I mean, you know, if he goes to rehab, all past incidents aside, they're going to bring him back just because of what they do. And, yeah, I mean, the larger issue is that Dixie Carter doesn't like to fire people. She just doesn't. And that's the main reason the company is in the shape that it's in right now. She won't fire people.
Well, and I mean, with Jeff Hardy, it's, you know, if he goes to rehab, it's a reason to bring him back.
Well, sure.
You know, and if he doesn't go, it's a reason to get rid of him. Or it's like, you know, hey, if he were to go back to WWE or anything like that, it's like, well, hey, you know, we at least did this right, and they just... They couldn't do it anyway. They can't manage their PR well enough anyway. But they seemingly just flat don't care. And, you know, it doesn't really matter because they fly so under the radar anyway that unless it's a TMZ-level story, it doesn't really matter. And that's where they should be thankful that they have, you know, crapped the bed so often because they're not even a blip on the screen.
All right. This person says...
I mean, compare that to what's happened in the UFC over the last couple of days, and, you know, you see the difference.
We'll get into Quentin here in a bit. This person wanted to get our thoughts on referees today in wrestling, how they can add to a match. I suppose an example would be how they help sell the near falls. It can sometimes be more memorable than the actual finish. When Hunter gave Taker the tombstone at WrestleMania, I thought that near fall was awesome. The best moment of the whole pay-per-view. Enough of my ramblings. Nick Patrick gets my vote. Nick Patrick? Is he even refereeing anymore?
No, but he was a good one for a long time.
I know, but the question was our thoughts on the best referee today in wrestling.
Oh,
Nick Patrick can't get your vote. That's not fair, Carl. He's not refereeing right now. And actually,
he's in Georgia
to be honest,
somewhere. I don't know.
I always hated Nick Patrick as a referee. I mean, no offense to the guy or anything like that, but I always thought that he, I don't know. You know, I thought Earl Hebner was awesome back in the day. You know, the slide in, the big dramatic count. And sometimes Nick Patrick would just, you know, he'd lay down on his side, and he'd go one, And he'd go two, and it was like, okay, there's no drama here with Nick Patrick, you know? I always like the small, fast, quick referees. And then some of the All Japan referees. Actually, a lot of the Japanese referees, you'd know this better than me, Mike, but I always noticed they had a special cadence. Like, in WWE, it's like every, you know, for the most part, it's like one, two, three. And the guy kicks out at two. And the referees, and there were several referees I saw in Japan who they'd go one, two, three. And there'd be just like that. I mean, you can't even define the difference between two and three in the sense that it was like, you know, the one count was 1 second. The two count was 1 second. The three count was 1.000001. But like that extra split second added so much drama when the guys kicked out. And I thought they were awesome. But I always liked Earl Hebner. Hildebrand was great. I'm trying to think of who else really stuck out.
Oh, for me, it was Tommy Young.
Tommy Young obviously was awesome, yeah.
And there were a lot, I mean, there's been a lot of great referees, too. I mean, Tommy Young, and there was the people were like, you know, somebody put it up in the forum. It's like, I can't believe you would rate referees back in the day. It's like, well, you knew them the same way you knew boxing ones, like Mills Lane, and the same way you knew managers and promoters and ring announcers like Jimmy Lennon. I mean, I don't think people realize Jimmy Lennon's father's in the Wrestling Observer News Hall of Fame, Newsletter Hall of Fame, you know, for all the announcing that he did over the years. And it's just, you remember all of those things, and they all kind of add to the overall of the match. And when WWE made, you know, they went out of their way to make everybody nameless and faceless. They kind of brought Scott Armstrong back, you know, in the last couple weeks, actually mentioning his name. I actually had noticed that, where maybe they're away from that stuff because, you know, those guys with personality, I mean, obviously Charles Robinson with Ric Flair and WCW, that's not what you want. But the fact that people know the referees and stuff like that, too, I mean, it adds to the overall product. And a good referee, I mean, Joey Morella was a good referee. The Hebners were good referees. Scrappy McGowan was a pretty good referee. You know, I hated Bronco Lubitsch. I hated the really slow old men referees that took forever. And I'm sure Bronco Lubitsch was a great guy, but I mean, this just the slow motion, you know, Gene Kaninsky and Starrcade 83. I mean, that level of type of, you know, referee absolutely drove me nuts. But, you know, for the most part, it's not
don't
like,
ever watch Lucha,
know,
then.
Referees got in the way.
Never watch Lucha then.
Well, that's
referees are about 1,000 years old.
Well, that is true with the incredibly slow count with the head. But see, at least they're wearing the headband, so they have some panache to go with the fact that they're slow.
Charles Robinson was always a great referee, I thought. And actually,
Pee-wee was a good referee. And oh, by the way, the Japanese guys, I don't know if you've ever noticed that a lot of them have the red shoes. It came from the famous American referee, Red Shoes Dugan, who may actually be in a referee hall of fame somewhere, probably should be when it comes to pro wrestling. But that's actually where the tradition of those red shoes started.
Charles Robinson, the referees in WWE are also ring crew guys. And a friend of mine stayed after for a while after the Raw in Seattle. And he immediately texted me and said, Charles Robinson is taking apart the ring right now in jean shorts. So there's a scoop for you. Jean shorts in 2011, not on John Cena. Also, in regards to refereeing, I just want...
You don't want to mess up your good khakis, though, when you're putting down the ring.
You really don't.
On them and whatnot.
You really don't. I want to mention this because it's my pet peeve.
Ooh.
If you're a
new segment.
If you're a wrestler listening to this right now, for the love of God, I beg of you, please do me this favor. Nothing drives me more crazy than you're in the middle of a great match and somebody hits a big move and somebody goes for a cover and the referee starts to count and the guy who is getting pinned looks over at the referee. That drives me crazy. Because I guess the guy is looking over because he wants to see the ref counting so he can kick out at the very last second and add drama to it. But I don't know if they realize that as soon as they turn their head to look at the referee counting, they kill the drama. I've never understood this. I mean, unless you've got like a referee that's like a complete incompetent, you know, there's a cadence to the count. One, two, three. Why do you have to look at the referee's hand? Why can't you just hear in your head, one, two, I kick out?
Yeah,
is it that hard?
Clock. you have it in football for the snap of the ball. I mean, it's yes. Why? Because they don't know any better and they're fools.
Yeah, but I've seen like Triple H do this, you know? I mean, nothing kills the drama of a near fall more than when the guy on the bottom looks at the referee's hand. I mean, maybe, yeah, you know, if you're way up in the cheap seats and you can't see anything, then maybe you don't notice the guy turn his head. But it's 2011, and everything is, you know, there's a cameraman right up there in the ring, you know, right up there on the ring apron. There's a cameraman down there filming right on the apron, and it's in HD. So whenever there's a great near fall, as soon as you turn your head, you may as well just kick out then, because everybody knows you're going to kick out. I don't think I've ever seen a guy turn his head and not kick out. So please, for the love of God, all of you wrestlers listening to this right now, stop looking at the referee during the near falls. Just listen, you know, one, two, kick out. Plus, if the referee knows what he's doing.
I make fun of your rant, but realistically, I have that for guys who leave their eyes open when they're supposed to be knocked out too.
Yeah, just you know, listen. You know, you can. I guarantee you can hear the count. You can feel the count. It's right next to your head, for crying out loud. There's a guy pounding on the canvas. I'm sorry, everybody.
Wrestling right. Needs to get its soul back, damn it.
It really does. All right, we're going to do a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 20 minutes, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Once again, everybody, if you love this show, and it's the only one you get to listen to every week for free, you are missing out. Imagine this show every day. Imagine 15 to 20 radio shows every single week that you can download to your iPod, iPad, iPhone, Droid, whatever the other phones are, I don't know.
But Brian, though, Brian,
yes?
if I mean, it's, and I'm not trying to demean this show, but even better than this show, because I'm not on it, and you'll be, I'm usually replaced by somebody like Bruno Sammartino, Paul Heyman, Jim Cornette, Jim Ross, Chris Jericho, all of these luminaries and distinguished celebrities that come on the show to talk to you.
Actually, I don't think Jim Ross has ever been on this show, and it's unfortunate.
But Lance Russell has.
Lance Russell was great. So, yeah, this show's available, and the archive, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you wake up at 2 a.m. this morning and you can't sleep and you think, there's nothing that would put me to sleep more than listening to the soothing tones of Brian Alvarez talking about, I don't know, whatever, ranting and raving about people turning their heads during near falls in WWE, well, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Thousands and thousands of hours of audio in the archives. If you sign up today, it's only $10.99 per month. You not only get all of the new shows, 15 to 20 a week, but every show we've ever done is available in the archives right now, waiting for you. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Download them. There's nothing wacky. There are no pop-ups, nothing like that. Just click the link, download the MP3, listen to it. If you like what you hear, this is the place for you. WrestlingObserver.com. If you love this show, I guarantee that you will not regret signing up. I've actually gotten a lot of emails from people that used to be freeloaders. They only listened to this show. They signed up for the website, and then they came back and said, I cannot believe I didn't sign up earlier. I am so happy to have found this place. So join the club, everybody. WrestlingObserver.com. And, of course, our Facebook, facebook.com/officialBrianAlvarez, as well as the Wrestling Observer Live official Facebook page. Check them both out. And, of course, at Sempervivi on Twitter, at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. All this stuff is up at WrestlingObserver.com as well. We are talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Quentin Jackson this week had a lot of problems, Mike. I don't know if you saw the interview where he attempted to motorboat Karen Bryant. Did you get a chance to check that out?
I did indeed. It was Deadspin did a nice little package together. And for those people who have ordered Pride DVDs in the past or have been on YouTube and followed Rampage Jackson's career in Japan, you would know that Rampage Jackson was a homeless man that the Japanese found on a bus, and he would communicate with doves the same way that Mike Tyson did with pigeons. But in the outtakes of a lot of those Pride things that they did, there were Quentin Jackson being Quentin Rampage Jackson, the wacky guy that you may know and love, but there was a situation where he went over and was on all fours and was basically humping the leg of a female reporter who was, you know, obviously he got a lot of yucks and ha-ha, but apparently she wasn't all that thrilled about it going on. And on this Deadspin.com thing that they had put together, that was on there. I'm not sure how old this is, was basically dry-humping a girl who was kind of playing along with it, too, but apparently she has come out and said that she didn't like it either, where he was basically just kind of bumping bodies with her, or, you know, crotchial region with her, and that apparently really surprised her, and it was, I guess, made her uncomfortable. And now there's a situation with Karen Bryan, who was on MTV and has been a Showtime reporter on CBS, where he did the old motorboat routine down near the microphone by her breasts, and that's all on there. And, you know, it's, if the old stuff had been dug up on Rampage Jackson and he had been a model citizen this whole time, and I'm not trying to call him out or anything, but if he hadn't had the situation with the truck and the pregnant girl, if there haven't been more things like this, I mean, you just, that old stuff, if this stuff wouldn't have happened, nobody would care. It's a different time in MMA, you could say that. But the problem is, it's a different time in MMA, and when you have situations like this, you've had comments that Joe Rogan and Dana White have made, you've had Rampage Jackson's history, it's just not, you're getting major sponsors. Dana White used to always say that he liked kind of being under the radar a little bit, because once you get that Ford Motor Company, or once you get that super big soft drink or something like that, you can't, you know, you're really under the microscope, and this is a good example of it, and it's not even as widespread as, you know, it could ever possibly could be, because if that was the case, Joe Rogan would have far more heat on him from a lot of different communities than he does right now. And Rampage Jackson, the same thing with Rampage Jackson, and the fact that he was called out by a female Yahoo reporter who Joe Rogan turned around and made disparaging, you know, comments about. It's just, it doesn't, no matter what you say, Dana White says about these guys being independent contractors, that's where it doesn't really matter. It comes back to you, and the fact that people, all they have to do is say, well, why don't you cut their contract then?
You know, I've read a lot about this in the last couple of days. I've read Kevin Ioli wrote something on Yahoo.com. A lot of people have written a lot of stuff about this. And, I mean, obviously, Dana White has said some things that he should not have said. He's used some terms he should not have used. And it's, you know, I'm sure that he lost some sponsorships because of it. And he lost some deals. You know, but he's apologized. And the key is, he apologized and he didn't do it again. So, you know, good for Dana. He shouldn't have done it in the first place, but at least he figured it out, okay? Now, Joe Rogan, I like Joe Rogan. You know, I think he's great at his job, and, you know, I'm a fan of his, but my God, you know, he should have learned from Dana White. You know, there are certain things that you just can't do, and he did it. And the problem was, if he'd just gone on and apologized for it, everything probably would have been fine. You know, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has said stupid things. I've said stupid things myself, but you apologize for it and you don't do it again, and life goes on, you know? Everybody makes mistakes. Just apologize and don't do it again. But, you know, how Joe Rogan did not learn from what happened with Dana White is baffling to me. I mean, it's baffling. And, you know, it's with the Quentin Jackson thing, you know, Quentin's got to stop. You know, he just has to. You can't do this. You know, it's the only thing about all of this that I do disagree with, however, that I find really interesting is the people who are, like, angry at Karen Bryant because she wasn't appalled, you know? Like there are people that actually they can't believe she was not appalled. They cannot believe that she played along with this, and they're saying she's wrong. She's wrong to not be appalled about this. And that's the part of the story that, like, to me, it's sort of like, you know, she's allowed to feel how she wants to feel.
Well, that's where the extreme gets it too, because I mean, if it came out tomorrow that they have been lifelong buddies from way back and they joke like this all the time and it's well known, that would be one thing. But the thing is, that didn't come out, and there are going to be people that will look at Quentin Jackson that don't like the sport, or have some, you know, again, whether it's just that or the fact that they just flat don't like Quentin Jackson's, you know, antics towards women, and it's been building up for a while. I mean, just the fact that it's, just the fact that it's 2011, I mean, just the fact that there's outrage, I can't believe how anybody would be upset that, you know, Karen Bryant isn't outraged. If she feels how she wants to feel, and that's fine. But, you know, again, it's if 20 years ago we have heard about the All Japan beating, you know, odds are it would have just been the tape, you know, it would have just been the match, and we probably never would have heard about it until later on about Taro. But the fact that police are involved now shows you it's a different era, and it's been leap years in MMA from, you know, again, you want to be mainstream. There's the old boy mentality and a locker room mentality and all of that stuff that's natural with sports, but that's where you have, it's just a different time. It's just a completely different time, and the outrage, for anyone to be outraged by the outrage, I'm sorry. I mean, Joe Rogan knows social media and all that sort of stuff. When all of this stuff takes off and people get blown up and upset about it, I mean, you can't have it both ways. You just don't say stupid things like that.
Yeah, if you want to write a column and you want to call out UFC and you want to call out Quentin Jackson, I mean, you have every right to do that. And again, Quentin Jackson should not have done what he did to Karen Bryant. With that said, if Karen doesn't care, then listen, there are at least two women that Quentin has humped that do care. So there's your story right there. You know, you don't have to, I just, to me, it's just like, you know, if she doesn't care, she doesn't care. And that's okay. You know, it's her decision.
And the flip side of that is that doesn't make it okay that he does it because she didn't care.
No, I'm not justifying what he did at all. I'm just saying don't attack Karen Bryant because she didn't care, because it didn't bother her. Okay, that's her own thing. You know, that's her own thing. If this really bothers you what he did, then call him out. And point out that the two girls he did this to that were really offended by it. You know, then you still have your story. You can still write all about it. But to me, it hurts your argument when you're getting angry at Karen Bryant because she's not professionally out or morally outraged by this. You know, so I don't know. That's just my whole take on it. But for God's sake, you know, someone needs to reel in Quentin Jackson. Someone needs to reel him in and sit him down and go, listen, like, stop now. You know, just stop.
And professionally, too, because he's coming off an embarrassing professional performance as far as being blown up in the third round and being considered for a title fight because of the way the chips are going to fall and his reaction in defeating Machida and his lack of building up this fight, too. I mean, all around, this is, you know, Quinn better wake up and realize that, you know, time's short for him. Does he actually really want this or not?
And I do think as well, you know, I think that UFC, when they do their deal next year, I think they need to talk to the guys and just talk to them about apologizing. Because I think this is going to blow up into something much, much bigger. And I think it already has. And part of the reason for that is because Joe Rogan didn't really apologize. I mean, he kind of did this halfway apology where I don't know what, I guess he was trying to save face among the people on the underground. But in the end, you know, he achieved less than nothing. Because if he would have just apologized, then maybe he would have lost face to some of these internet posters. But at least he would have gotten a real apology out there, and things could have moved on. As it was, he did kind of a halfway apology. So, you know, the people he was apologizing to, they saw it for what it was. It's not a real apology. And then, you know, the people on the underground thought, well, why did he even apologize at all? And so he achieved nothing. You know, his options were, I don't apologize and I save face among these guys on the underground, or, you know, I apologize and I save face among those that I offended, but the underground people are going to be mad at me. He chose the middle road and achieved like less than nothing. So just to me, UFC has reached the point right now where you just got to be smart about this sort of thing. And if you make a mistake, everybody's going to make a mistake. You just have to apologize and do your best to not do it again. And you can't do a halfway apology, and you can't not apologize. I mean, it's just, like you said, it's 2011 now. It's a different world.
Lay down the hammer a lot more.
What was that?
UFC, before we run out of time, UFC needs to lay down a hammer a lot more, too, because you know, this is going to keep happening because they want guys on media and they're going to say stupid things and do stupid things. I mean, the harder you come down on stuff that you can control like this and really outlash on it and not say things like, well, they're independent contractors, will be better for overall business and PR down the line anyway.
Yeah, and Tito Ortiz and his wiener. I mean, what a weekend for UFC. Moments, I shouldn't say moments, but, you know, they very recently did the deal where they're going to give out bonuses for the most creative tweets. You know? What a coincidence that, like, a week after they make this announcement, Tito Ortiz, I don't know what he was thinking. You know, he claimed his phone was hacked, but the hacker took a picture of him nude. You know, I just don't understand what he's trying to explain right here, but a disaster, everybody. It's up on TMZ.com if you don't know what we're talking about. Just check it out. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. Was that the best segue you've all ever heard or what? Check out TMZ for more on Tito Ortiz's wiener. We'll be right back!
Well, you're not lying.
I'm not lying. I mean, how do you do that, everybody? I love the celebrity sends out a stupid picture and then immediately talks about how their phone was hacked. Really? Who took the picture?
Well, yeah, at least with the whole thing of, like, Santonio Holmes or the Steelers and guys like that, they blamed it on their girlfriends doing it or their exes doing it of pictures that they had sent to them. Yeah, with Twitter, just it's the line that the Kurt Angle's using, everybody else, and even this congressman. I mean, it's just universal. My tweets were hacked.
Yeah, they were hacked.
And the only thing that got sent out of all of the stuff in there, you know, they don't send out a bunch of pictures. No, just the one dong shot. That's it. Not anything else that could be embarrassing in the phone. And I'm sure Tito has got something else embarrassing in the phone.
Let's say that my Twitter password was like, you know, WOL. And somebody hacked into my Twitter. Okay. So now how do they get the picture off my phone and get it up on Twitter? How's that work?
Well, I think they take the whole phone. I'm not that technologically advanced where I guess they can access anything. They can even read your mind if they can get into your iPhone.
All right, let's say that somebody stole my phone and I had a picture of myself in a compromising position and their first act was, I'm going to tweet this photo. Okay, so then 5 minutes later, I have my phone back? I mean, obviously that would have happened if Tito would have had to tweet that, okay, my phone was hacked. Right?
Well, Tito is now saying, well, Tito couldn't get back into it. And it's like, oh, well, those are the breaks. If you don't like it, don't click. You know.
How could he not get back into his, I don't know, this whole thing?
I don't know. As Jenna said, I never thought I would ever hear these words together. But as she said, kids before penis.
That's what she said, everybody. What a show this has been. We're going to be back next week with more. We'll be talking Slammiversary, the Slammiversary of my life. As well as the Slammiversary of the website and the newsletter, and unfortunately TNA as well. But a lot of other stuff coming up. Want to thank Mike, as always. Check out WrestlingObserver.com. Back next week with more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.